Good morning. Good morning and welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. For some 50 years, nestled right here in the guardian trees of Southwest Portland, Oregon, on the land of the Kayapuya, Clackamas, and Multnomah original peoples of the Pacific Northwest, and affectionately known as Woof. I'm Salima Malson. I use the pronouns she and her, and it is my absolute joy and privilege to be part of this morning's service. An hour or so, when we gather to engage in the celebration of community, and where today our celebration focuses on seeing more deeply into the minds and hearts of our fellow humans as we explore the Enneagram with our guest speaker, Dale Rhodes. Dale is no stranger to Woof, although it has been a while since we've seen him. He is a certified, well-seasoned, and full-time professional in the Enneagram field with a long list of credentials I'm not going to bother to go into. But serving as a mentor and a guide, he has a private practice since 1998 where he works with individuals, couples, small and large groups, using the Enneagram as a tool to weave world wisdom traditions and good old common sense into a soft fabric of communication that honors numerous perspectives. Next Saturday, Dale will be leading a workshop right here at Woof, and I believe there is still space available if you haven't registered and want to. So, whether you are with us in the sanctuary this morning or watching online at home or somewhere else, whether you come with a heart bursting with joy, or one that's been broken open by the persistent tragedies of today's world, know that you are so very welcome here. Whoever you are, wherever you've been, where you're going, wherever you come from. Whether you just stopped by today because you heard that it was Group Soup Sunday, or you are seriously looking for a spiritual home, we're very glad to have you with us on this beautiful, typical early March morning. We will indeed be having coffee online. We'll be having coffee, tea, and soup after the service downstairs. And if you're online, you're welcome to come back to what we call the after-service coffee hour as well. No coffee. You have to bring your own. Also, today we are encouraging you, if you're watching online, to please get involved in the chat section that you'll see on your screen. And for the questions and answer time that will follow Dale's talk, please be sure and engage in that. We're going to be able to put your questions up on the screen so that everyone can take part. This is my disclaimer. I'm going to give you my disclaimer right now. I lost my glasses this morning. I've enlarged the font here. And my ears are terribly stopped up. So if you need to tell me something, just yell it out. Okay, here we go then.
You're doing great.
What? Thank you, Dale. All right. So before we settle in, though, there are a couple of things we want to make you aware of. Today marks the end of our stewardship drive, and so here's what we're going to say about that. We'll start with the video.
Uh, no
Uh-oh. Caleb, what's Caleb telling?
Hold on. Talk amongst yourselves.
I can't hear you. Okay, why don't we let Karen take it over?
Pledge drive total today.
Have you got a
green light? Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Red. Now I just heard it, didn't I?
Yeah.
Okay. Pledge drive total. Well, you remember that what we were wanting was $240,000. Okay, we haven't gotten there yet. We are at $207,595. We still have some people yet to pledge. Today is a great day to pledge. If you pledge today, you won't get a personal phone call or a knock at your door. Because we will talk to every single person who we have on our members and friends list, because we need everybody to take part in the pledge drive. We have big plans. We're full. We need to accommodate people downstairs. We've got more kids in RE. We've got so much going on. We have got big plans. So we can't do anything more if we don't bring in a little more money. So there are forms available downstairs at the pledge drive table. You can do it online. I bet that if you look around, there's a QR code somewhere posted. If you can't find it, talk to me or talk to Jen. You can also look at the email that you were sent several times. Anyway, thank you so much to everybody who has pledged and everybody who is pledging. We do this together, and we appreciate. Pardon me?
We have the video now.
Yes, let's have the video.
And secondly, Ashley Almer has. Oops. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's go
think
right ahead with
and
this.
Think
sorry.
Right. Think low and think high of the things you can think up if only you try. Dr. Seuss.
Imagination is the beginning of creation. You imagine what you desire. You will what you imagine. And at last, you create what you will. George Bernard Shaw.
Mark Twain said, you can't depend on your eyes when your imagination is out of focus.
Let's imagine what it would be like if we had faith that each of us would give our fair and generous share according to our ability to give.
Imagine all the good we can do in our community.
Imagine the feeling we'll all share after a successful campaign.
Good morning. My name is Nancy Kneifel, and I've been a member of WOLF for about a year and a half. When my husband and I moved from Denver to Portland, we realized very quickly that we would need to find a UU church to call home. The first time we visited WOLF, we were met at the church door by very friendly people. We enjoyed the service, and during coffee downstairs, we met a number of people who were also very kind and friendly. We left with a very positive impression of WOLF. Over the last 1.5 years, I have continued to be impressed by what the little church in the woods has to offer and to challenge me. I value the genuine acceptance of all who enter our doors, and that social justice is an important part of the mission of our church. I participate in some of the many volunteer opportunities, from painting walls to serving coffee each month. Joining meetings like the women's group and a chalice circle and attending social activities all give me a feeling of being part of the caring community that is Wolf. As I make my financial pledge, I truly am grateful that I can give, feeling that it is a privilege to help support this church. The building in sight, the ministry and staff, the mission, the activities, and all that means so much to me. I hope you will join me in supporting this church as you are willing and able. Thank you.
And now, Ashley, will you come up and talk a little bit about our connections?
Hello. Can you hear me? Hello. They weren't planning to use this on video. Am I good?
Here we go.
Yeah. Well, Nancy Knipe could not have segued me better. My name is Ashley Ulmer. And I've got a little announcement about the upcoming Connections Fair. Like, what are we going to do with all this stewardship that we're generating financially? In response to the congregation's call to better understand the many ways to get involved and also be introduced down those paths, the Wolf Board is hosting a Connection Fair on April the 6th to stir the pot for all of our communities and groups. We know people want to get involved. People who are new to WOLF can't possibly yet know all the ways to sink in here. And those who've been here around a while may be looking to shift into new interests or roles, freshening up that service spirit that we appreciate and rely on so deeply here at WOLF. In 2 weeks, on April 6th, after the service, from about 12 to 1 in Forest Hall, you will find representatives from all of the various groups and committees available. We have between 19 and 22 groups going to be represented. Refreshments will be served, and we hope you can join us. Some of those groups would be Grounds Team, Group Soup, CareNet, Women's and Men's Group, I think a budding LGBTQ group, the Hospitality Team, Tech Team, Auction, Social Justice, Religious Education, Buddhist Meditation, Arts and Aesthetics, Coffee Team, Music Team, Parking Organization Team. So there's lots of ways to find your talents at use. Thank you.
That's good. Thank you, Ashley. Thank you. And now, the moment you've all been waiting for. It's time to sing. It's time to sing about who we are and where we belong. So Karen will lead us, and we've got some guitar and a little piano, and here we go.
Jim, is my mic on? Okay, great. So this is All God's Critters Got a Place in the Choir. It's not actually number 323. I don't think it shows up in the hymnal at all. That's why I have Rise Up Singing. Kids, we got kids here somewhere? When it comes time, you have to do the sounds, right? The cow goes, moo, so, and the old coyote howls, right? So we want to hear all that. Ready?
Okay.
Here we go.
So stay in your seats, stand up, dance in the aisle, whatever you'd like.
All God's creatures got a place in the choir. Some sing low and some sing high. Sing out loud on the telephone wire. And some just clap their hands or paws or anything they got now.
Listen to the bass.
It's the one on the bottom where the bullfrog ropes and the
hip-hop
and groans with a big to-do. And the old cow just goes moo.
Dogs
and the cats, they take up the middle while the honeybee hums and the cricket fiddles. The donkey brays and the pony neighs and the old coyote goes nice. All God's critters got a place in the choir. Some sing low and some sing high.
Some sing
out loud on the telephone wire. And some just clap their hands or paws or anything they got. No.
Listen to the top with a little bird.
scream. Howl, 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 everything, and the blackbird disagrees. Singing in the nighttime, singing in the day. The bird quacks and he's on his way. Nothing much to say. The porcupine talks to himself.
Everybody.
All God's critters got a place in the choir. Some sing low and some sing higher and sing out loud on the telephone wire. And some just clap their hands or paws or anything they got. Now,
it's a simple song everywhere by the ox and the fox and the grizzly bear. Don't be alligator and the hawk above. Sly old weasel and the turtle dove.
All God's critters got a place in the choir. Some sing low and some sing higher. Sing out loud on the telephone wire. Some just clap their hands or paws or anything they got now.
Thank you.
Woo-hoo. Thank you. Thank you all. Now that we're in the spirit, so to speak. It was the author Amor Tolles who wrote in his beautiful novel, A Gentleman in Moscow, "After all, what can a first impression tell us about someone that we just met for a minute in the lobby of a hotel? For that matter, what can a first impression tell us about anyone? Why, no more than a chord can tell us about Beethoven or a brushstroke about Botticelli. By their very nature, human beings are capricious. They are so complex, so delightfully contradictory that they can only deserve and should deserve not only our consideration, but our reconsideration and our unwavering determination to withhold our opinion until we have engaged with them in every possible setting and every possible hour. So, let us take just a minute, to engage with these capricious characters sitting around you. Let us greet each other with the question, where and when in your life have you felt most understood? Quickly now. Don't overthink it. Okay, we could go on for a long time, I know. You can't hear me? Hello? Hello? It's green. Can you hear me? Yes? Okay. Good. My green light is on, so I assume you can hear me. Okay, good. 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 So now let us, as always, begin our official service with the lighting of our chalice. And if Ursa is here to do that, I don't see Ursa. Oh, here he comes. Here he comes. Great. So as Ursa brings our flame to life, let us speak together our opening affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious. And let us open our hearts to love ourselves and each other. And our new. There we go. Thank you. Thank you. And now if the children will come up, please, to help us sing and sign Spirit of Life. Yeah, the kids are going to stay up here because we've got more for them to do in just a little bit. As we heard earlier in our stewardship chat, our circle of beloved community is being drawn wider in many ways. The circle of gratitude and giving is such an important part of WOF. It's what makes us who we are and who we are becoming. So in a few moments now, our offering baskets will be passed among you, and we will gratefully receive whatever financial gift you may choose to give. But beyond that, and just as important, we are so grateful for the non-financial gifts, the many other gifts that you bring with your presence to our community. Whether in the form of volunteering to help with coffee or group soup or working on the grounds or maybe just listening to another's sadness or concern. So as the basket comes to you, whether you place paper or coin into it or not, please consider what it is that you have to be most grateful for and what it is that you might have to give. If the hosts will come forward. And let us speak together our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us. Giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs so that we may learn from the generosity of others. All right. Thank you, Isaac. Thank you all for your generous gifts this morning. And Izzy, do you want to now take it away?
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
My name's Izzy. I'm the DRE here at WOF. And today we're going to read the book, The Elephant in the Dark, which is based on a poem by Rumi. This is a little bit of a retelling. The merchant Ahmad brought a mysterious creature all the way from India. The news spread fast through the village. What could the huge beast be? The villagers ran to the merchant's barn next to his house to see the strange creature, but the doors were locked, and the merchant, tired from his journey, was sound asleep. The rowdy crowd woke the merchant up. He stuck his head out the window and shouted, "It's too dark in the barn to see anything. Go home and let me sleep."
"Can you three go up?"
But no one went home. Instead, they decided to see the beast for themselves. The first villager snuck into the barn, and he tripped on a bucket of water and fell on the animal's long, slithery nose. This startled the villager and set him running. Outside, he gathered himself, puffed his chest out, and said, "The creature is like a snake." Next, a short man entered and reached very slowly into the dark. He wrapped his arms around one of the animal's legs and then rushed out to report, "People, the creature's not like a snake. No, it's round and tall, like a tree trunk." A third villager climbed inside the dark barn. The beast swept its huge ear across her face, and the woman ran out. "The creature is neither like a snake nor a tree," she panted. "It's like a fan, a huge, floppy fan." The three villagers argued excitedly. Others scratched their heads and disagreed. Each offered such different views. The fight escalated, and the remaining villagers stole into the dark barn to find out the truth for themselves. "It's like a leathery jug of water." "No, it's skinny and hairy like a paintbrush." "Oh, it's definitely sharp, like a plow." "No, it sounds just like a horn." All day long, they called each other names and fought to prove each other wrong. Into the night, no one listened, but everyone shouted and shoved. When the sun finally rose the next morning, the merchant Ahmad led the beautiful, gentle creature to the river, but everyone was too busy fighting to notice the very large gray elephant. No one even noticed that each only knew a small piece of the truth. The end. That's a great story. It's a great story about how each of our perspectives, each of our viewpoints, tells the whole tapestry of our reality. And today, the kids are going to maybe go outside if it's not too rainy, and we're going to talk about the spring equinox and look at how our grounds are changing now that winter is over and spring is here. So, as you are willing and able, please stand and form an archway across the aisle, and the kids will go off to their classrooms as we send them out.
So now, as we, can you hear me? So now, as we prepare to enter our quiet time, let us just settle in a little deeper. Take a deep, relaxing breath. Close your eyes if you wish, and take in these words from the late poet William Stafford, titled "A Ritual to Read to Each Other." If you don't know the kind of person I am, and I don't know the kind of person you are, a pattern that others made may prevail in the world, and following the wrong god home, we may miss our star. For there is many a small betrayal in the mind, a shrug that lets the fragile sequence break, sending with shouts the horrible errors of childhood storming out to play through the broken dike. and as elephants parade holding each other's tail. But if one wanders, the circus won't find the park. I call it cruel, and maybe the root of all cruelty, to know what occurs but not recognize the fact. And so I appeal to a voice, to something shadowy, a remote, important region in all who talk. Though we may and could fool each other, we should consider, lest the parade of our mutual life get lost in the dark. For it is important that awake people be awake, or a breaking line may discourage them back to sleep. The signals we give, yes or no or maybe, should be clear. The darkness around us is deep. Indeed, the darkness around us is deep. And now is the time in our service when we invite our hearts to open not only to the tremendous beauty and joy that life brings us every day, but to the grief and sorrow that walks right alongside. Our musical interlude offers time to honor your particular joy or sorrow as we welcome you to come forward and place a stone in the water here on the chalice table. Or if you'd rather, to hold it quietly in reflection, meditation, or prayer, as may be your custom. For those who choose to come forward, I will have a mic for you to share a few words aloud if you like. And those who wish to share in this way, come forward now, row by row. Let's begin in the front and just come up as you wish, one side and go back that way. Yes, let's do that.
I'm thankful for the promise of daffodils.
My stepmother went ahead and passed away the day before yesterday with her short bout of pancreatic cancer, so Carolyn Young is free now.
Still being judged cruelly by people that only know one thing about us, but We're still persisting. We're still here.
This is for our great-grandson, Finley, who loves to video chat with great-grandma and grandpa.
This community has been so welcoming to my family. All four of my siblings are here today, and even though I don't even live in this state, I feel so grateful that my children get to grow up with these values and these people.
You're grateful for you.
I'm grateful for improving at the skill of stress management. For it has made it really hard throughout my life, but I'm seeing strides and improvement, and yeah, it's really exciting.
One less stone.
No, a bigger one.
One big last stone for all the joys and sorrows that have gone unattended in our hearts around the world. This morning, let's have just a couple of moments of silence and then hear from our special music collective.
The song we're going to sing for you today is called Dig by a band called Incubus, and you might not be familiar with it, but it's apropos for today's theme because we are looking inward and working on understanding our own strengths and weaknesses and how it all fits into a bigger story of community. So that's what you're going to be hearing in the song. Once we have our singers on stage.
We're really, really ran out.
Maybe we'll just give it a minute, less than, and then maybe we can reorder the service.
Well, what I'd like to say, am I on?
Yes.
What I'd like to say during this little bit of time that we have is that we are going to run over our projected hour, and it's important that we have a question and answer time with Dale this morning. So if you are able to stay beyond the 11:30 mark, please do, and then we'll go on downstairs probably by 11:45 for coffee, soup, conversation, and our social justice conversation, which is also going to happen.
Is there someone that could be looking at the service to keep going?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
We're looking for
I know.
So could we move something else up to
nope.
Oh, we can't.
Well, what we could do, actually, is we could have Dale come up and read the benediction that he is planning to close the service with. Would that work? We are nothing if not flexible here. Or we can, okay, all right, let's do it this way. Let's do it this way. We're going to bring Dale up. He's going to, and I didn't get a chance to introduce you.
Do you want
to
say anything?
No, but not particularly.
Okay, totally fine. Do you want to borrow my brand new professors to get
Oh, them? No. I need like
I think this,
300.
You know, this is very funny to have the children's story, the way we have it, about perspective, and your worship leader today has lost her glasses, and I'm only on day four.
Oh, this has to go this way. It has to go this direction. There we go.
All right.
Oh, well.
Just down. Is that good? Yeah, that's totally fine.
How about if you take these?
Nope, I'm all good, thank you.
This is Dale Rhodes. Dale is, we haven't seen him in a long time, but he is he's somebody that is very familiar with us and with people in general. So,
long time.
Yep. So we're going to just turn it over to him for
Thank
now
you.
and see what happens.
Thank you.
But we need to get this mic fixed.
Okay. You want it up? Maybe to my side.
I'm turning.
Everybody in the back hear me?
It needs to be pointed right at you.
Right at me. Thank you. Oh, I like that direct answer. Oh, thank you very much, AV folks, for that. That's really helpful. I appreciate it. I didn't know that I'd be coming to a high-tech woof. It has been a long time. I won't spend a lot of time because we're behind, but I've done our whole lives here. I've done youth programming. I've done a lot of interfaith services here over the years. But it has been a very long time, and I'm glad to see that your congregation and your community is thriving. It's really good to be here. So I'm going to go a little off script and tell you something that came to my mind this morning when I was unloading and reloading the dishwasher that my partner had loaded. Sound familiar to anybody?
Yeah.
So here I am getting up. I've made my life teaching about understanding perspective and worldview and how different we all are. It's been a focus of my life, pluralism, basically. And I'm reloading the dishwasher, and I was thinking of the subtle difference between teaching how a dishwasher is loaded versus how I load the dishwasher. That's us. Every one of us in the room is a colonizer at times of our perspectives. And even UUs, of which I was a member for many years, I was on the way to becoming a UU minister, but I'm really not very social, so it probably would have been a disaster. But theologically and politically and all of that, I'm aligned. But even we as pluralists and as diversity-focused people can sometimes have an arrogance about our individual perspectives in understanding the part of the elephant. Now, whether that elephant is spirituality and growth, you know, the Buddhists call this pointing to the moon, but we fall in love with our finger. Everybody has their finger that's pointing to the moon, saying, "Don't you see the moon?" But what we're looking at is our finger. That's really the theme that I have for you today, is the personal disarmament and the humility and the curiosity that it takes to understand that we're in a world where we all have a legitimate worldview, but it is partial. The best system that I have found for that is this diagram that is very old in its general orientation. I won't be teaching you about the history of this. Nobody really has an exact history. But I have yet to find a better system that helps people understand their perspective. If you don't like personality as a term, or you don't want to be put into a box, your primary views and your primary values, your core value that really motivates you, those are not the same for all of us, but we secretly think that we're going to get others to prop up your value. I'm short on time. Salima said, "Oh yeah, we're going to start you by 11 and get you off by 11:20. So it's 11:16. So I'll use your time well. I really appreciate you being here, and thank you for the invite. This is a pluralistic world where we're very different, and we have to understand one another's perspectives and values, right? Is there a map that can help you understand what makes you tick and what ticks others off? This is it. The Enneagram is the best system that I've found, and it's been a life theme for me. I've geared my life towards it through a lot of seeking. It's a map. It's not the territory. It's a very good map. It can help you understand content in others. Why does someone else speak this way, care about something? Why would you put the larger items on top of a dishwasher rack? There's a legitimate perspective there. What about a map? What if you had a map when you were young? If someone gave a map to these kids that just left us that said, here's a way to understand ethics, values, natural gifts that will come to you, natural strengths that will come to you, but Achilles' heels
challenges and biases that come with that. Wouldn't it be great if you had the ability to give someone your operating instructions, right? Haven't you ever wanted to do that? Haven't you given people your operating instructions and then it didn't work? Have you ever wanted to get someone's operating instructions, but then you open it and it looks like an IKEA dining room set that you're supposed to figure out? And they're like, no, this is really how I am. And you think, oh my gosh, how would I translate this? At work, in family, in partnerships, understanding people politically, socially, spiritually, emotionally, I have yet to find a better map than this system. So today, I only have time to give you a very brief introduction to what we'll cover next week in the workshop that I'll do here and in the work that I do most of my time to navigate the world of difference and plurality. I've been searching for a map like this my entire life. I was a young gay kid in the 60s, 70s, and 80s in Chicago, constantly being told that what I was supposed to be seeing was reality. And what I was experiencing just as a young gay kid and a sensitive kid and an emotional boy was not actually what others were experiencing. So at a very early age, I knew I was having an experience that was different than what others were expecting me to have. I wanted to figure that out. For years, I looked in gender studies. I have an undergraduate degree minor in women's studies. There was no gender studies back in the 80s. It was women's studies. And an interpersonal communications degree. I was in social work and politics for a long time. I was in mental health, working with people that were homeless and mentally ill, looking at how they saw the world. And I eventually came out to Oregon and got a master's in spiritual traditions and ethics, trying to figure out, what about spiritual understanding? How do people actually communicate spiritual experience to one another? Not just here's how I'd like to load the dishwasher, but here's my experience of the divine. Have you ever been in a room where someone is saying, oh my God, my life just opened when I saw the trees at Woof? And then somebody else says, these are kick-ass people who do social justice and call a spade a spade. That's spirituality to me. Those two people may never meet unless they have a map to understand that we're in a circle where all of these points of views matter. The tree experience matters, and the social justice experience matters. On a personal note, I'll bet you know people that would say that their primary value may be love, kindness. I have a mom who would say something like, it's better to be loving than right, right? And then there's other people, tell me if I need to make any other changes, that sounds better, right? Down. Okay, tip it down.
Towards
your mouth.
Okay, how's that?
It has to point right at your mouth.
It's going to point right there. Okay, let's see. How is that? Okay. Swing it towards? Swing it. I can do that too. I do those workshops too. Okay, how's that? Now you know I don't like being videotaped. Yeah, is that better? So you may know people who would say something like, it's better to be loving than right. You know people like that? And I'll bet you also know people who would say, call a spade and cut the crap.
Yeah.
Okay, is there anything wrong with either one of those people? No. These are two leading values. There are people in the personality system that I teach, and again, if you don't like the word personality, people that lead with primary values. And we all walk into a room with a primary value that says, this is what I lead with. This is generally what I do. There's nothing wrong or right with having that as a leading value and as a primary value to offer to the world. It's just that if you're using it at a time when it's not helpful, you're no longer useful, valuable, adaptive, contributing. You're in a structure that says, well, this is how I want things. I call it colonizing, right? The Enneagram helps you realize that there are at least 9 primary ways that you might approach situations. So it helps you broaden your experience of values that you might use. At times, it's helpful to be loving. At times, it's helpful to be direct and truthful, right? At times, we should be concerned about safety and security. But at times when we know that safety and security is taken care of, it's time to play, right? Some of us lead with play. Some of us lead with safety and security. Some of us lead with directness. And some of us lead with, I think we should be loving, right? So this system has really helped me understand when I see people that get along well with others, people that are leaders, people that are members, and they do it well, they seem to have this understanding in spades, not only of themselves, but how to get along with others. UL or UUs, or at least friends of UUs, so I'm going to skip the two pages that defends why this is good for UUs. I think you maybe have it already. I actually think that your children's religious education story gave it to you. I want to tell you, you know, Jesus used parables, so I'm going to tell you a parable. But it's a true one about my dad. This puts the Enneagram into flesh. I never really understood my dad. He was a Korean War vet, loyal to his country, and he was a loyal union laborer. Anybody remember the movie Norma Rae? That was my dad, only bald. Okay? He was the kind of guy that would tuck me in at night because he was the primary parent for me. I was bonded with. And because he'd been in the Army, he would tuck me in really tight. You know how you weren't allowed to go to bed or you weren't allowed to go do your work? And he said you had to flip a quarter. Yeah, you got to flip a quarter. If the quarter doesn't bounce, you got to remake your bed. So my dad would do this to me every night. I'd be laying there like a mummy. But I loved it. I loved it. But my dad would tell me his value. He would say to me, "You are never going to have to leave this house. You are so lucky. You're warm. We have food. I have work. You're never going to have to leave this house." Well, I'm laying there, and I can barely breathe. I'm all warmed up because I think my dad's the coolest thing. But I'm thinking, I never think about having to leave this house. But my father's value was not my value. My dad's primary value was loyalty, safety, security. I don't think about loyalty, safety, and security a lot. I barely remember to wear pants. Like, I'm just not a thinker, planner. I'm off in a dreamy world of, you know, happiness, sadness, depth. But at a very early age, I was aware that my dad thought a lot about safety, security, predictability. Yes, all parents do, but my dad did it for work. He was a carpenter. Like, I'm really good at support. Like, I would love to support you, but you don't want me deciding if this is a supporting wall. Got it? Got it? When somebody says, "Are you supportive?" my dad would say, "Yes." But of course, the way he supported, the way he loved and worked, was through offering questioning, doubting. The way I offer it is by being deep, intimate, personal. You see, we're even using the same language, the word support, but we're missing each other the way the elephants might miss each other if one of them lets go of the other's tail. That's what that poem is about, how precarious we miss each other. When my dad and I were not speaking after I came out, in my 20s, my dad would anonymously deliver the ugliest parka in the world that even Kenny from South Park wouldn't wear. He would anonymously deliver a warm parka to my doorstep. My dad, when I was in high school, would anonymously fill up my gas tank. My dad would buy you an air compressor for Christmas. Why? You can tell already, like, I want a Care Bear, I want a chocolate bar, and a Hallmark card that's saying, "You are the most special, unique person in the world." You can tell that's me. I'm like a living Care Bear. My dad gave me an air compressor. Why? Because he saw the world as dangerous, that you should be prepared and ready. My dad put that to work as a carpenter. He built nests for cars. He built nests for people. That's what he did. Right? He made the world safe. Fill up your gas tank. Have an air compressor. When my dad died, I really never understood him until I opened up the trunk of his car. And in the trunk of my father's car were two air compressors, lock thaw, kitty litter in case you got stuck in the snow, chains, cables, 17 cans of Fix-A-Flat, a battery recharger, Prestone, oil, rags, and I kid you not, I have two brothers and two sisters that will tell you this is true, clean pair of underwear, in a plastic bag, in a Folgers coffee can. Now, you figure that one out. You have a car accident, and before the ambulance takes you away, you get out and change your underwear. I don't know, but I'm telling you. What does this say? This was a man that I didn't understand. Pretty much post-puberty, I never got back with my dad. We missed each other. I did not understand that when somebody gives you an air compressor, it means I love you. I want you to be safe. What I was looking for is, I love you, you're so emotional and deep. But what I got was, I want you to be safe. I didn't know that was a language of work. I certainly didn't know that was a language of love. This is what taught me that. This is going on in our lives all the time, where people are trying to love you, and you're trying to love them. Or you're trying to work with and for them. Or they're trying to work with and for you, and we're not meeting. Because one of us, or both of us, are stuck in our perspectives. That's not love. That's not work. That's not what we should be paying attention to. And it wasn't until that moment when I thought, oh my God, this is what I want to teach people. Because I never understood my dad until that moment, that was his language, right? He wanted kids that knew how to survive a zombie apocalypse, that knew how to survive a pandemic, that knew how to build lean-tos, that could hunt, camp, fish, and be outdoors folks. Let me introduce you to my mom really briefly, who is, I was telling Rosie, who I haven't, it was just a pleasure to check in with Rosie. I haven't seen her for years, but I've known her for years. I mentioned that my mom is 91 years old and is a Disney character. She wakes up singing. Just the, you know, the new Snow White movie? That's my mom at 91. This is not a suspicious, doubting, caution, be loyal, be careful, have doubt, join the union because, you know, watch out for the man. My mom is somebody that actually generally is positive. She's sort of, well, let's just say a more bodily balanced Dolly Parton who really believes in love and kindness. Okay? And somebody that generally believes that a stranger is not someone to be feared, but someone that you haven't made a friend of yet. A very different perspective than the value I got from my dad that said, be careful. My mom would say, well, we should be signing up to serve the poor. We visited people that had polio. I have 3 siblings. There are only 5 of us. 3 of them are nurses. My mom wanted loving children. Anybody in Portland seeing the posters of Dolly Parton saying, kindness, pass it on? That's my mom. That's my mom. The value is to be kind. The value is to be nice. In this system, we would say that my father was an Enneagram 6, known as the loyal skeptic. Think Woody Allen, Sally Field. People that question and doubt, I suspect Jon Stewart from The Daily Show. Like, I'm little. He always has this great thing of saying, I'm just a little Jew from New York raised by a single parent mom. And then he goes and rips Congress a new one because they haven't supported first responders. These Enneagram 6 loyal skeptics are loyal. They pick up a bone and they won't let it go down for the underdog. My mom didn't live in that world. She wanted loving children. She wanted to show that the world could be loving and kind. Neither one of them were wrong or right. But my mom got me, you can see, 3 nurses. My brother and 2 sisters are nurses. And then the world's best single dad lives in Charlotte, my brother. My mom got what she wanted. She instilled the value of kindness, love, service. Remember the poor. Remember that people have had polio. Remember that people are homebound. To this day, she's organizing her children that way, to always remember the greater family. So the Enneagram, very briefly, because I'm already getting the wind-up here, the Enneagram will tell you, for example, that my mom lives in this odd-looking diagram. And Enneagram sounds weird. Ennea is just Greek for 9. This is a 9-pointed figure, and it points to 9 values. I'm going to give them to you really quickly. My mom, the connector, type 2, helping, being nice, being of assistance, care, love. Jesus was probably a 2, right? I mean, what other spiritual teacher would say, love the one you're with? Well, there's a song, but, you know, like, love is the primary value. That's not the Buddha's value. The Buddha's value is we're kind of on our own. We should decrease our suffering and hence decrease the suffering of others. The world religions are proposing values to you based on these different personalities. Type 3 is a type that's known for success. Think Oprah Winfrey. coaching people, getting things done. My own type is about being deep, being unique, being interesting, valuing authenticity. There's a type called the observer, and that is someone who is more comfortable watching, observing, reading, getting information. You might think of Wise Owl from Winnie the Pooh, Ryan Gosling, and the Buddha. I've already mentioned my dad, type 6, a Woody Allen and Sally Field union organizer, even Piglet. Piglet has sort of this, like, I'm really nervous, but if it goes down, I've got your back. By the way, I know I'm going to take a little more time, but one of my best friends is a 6, a loyal skeptic like my dad. I asked my friend Bonnie, why am I your friend? She's a 6 like my dad. And this was her response. Because if I ever needed to kill somebody, you'd shoot, shovel, and shut up. Now, when somebody asks me, like if Virginia asked me, why am I your friend? I'd be like, you are so unique. You are like no one else. I love you. You make me have feelings. And my friend Bonnie is like, if I ever need to kill somebody, I know you got my back, right? We're that different. But it isn't random. That's what I'm teaching you today. It isn't random. You can make sense of this if you learn a real basic understanding of, oh, these are the primary values that people are looking to have validated and looking to enact. Just a couple of other ones. There's a type called the Epicure, type 7. This is, think Goldie Hawn and Tigger and Peter Pan. But also someone like Harvey Milk, people who give up their freedom so that others may have freedom. Their primary value, sevens, is not necessarily pleasure. They're generally pretty positive folks, but they believe in freedom, freedom of ideas, freedom of experience. And there's a type 8, a protector, somebody who calls a spade, right? Think Kamala Harris, think Sandra Bullock, Dr. Phil, if you know who Awkwafina is. And then there's Mr. Rogers, type 9, Mr. Rogers and Gloria Steinem. These are people who promote peace and harmony, consensus. There's a lot of you nature in this type 9, that we should all be in harmony, we should have consensus. There are people that believe in consensus, and they live that out as their primary value, consensus, peace, and harmony. And then there's other people that say, we're going to do what needs to be done, and we'll evaluate later. You're Unitarians. You must know what I'm talking about. There's like 17 committees recruiting right now, right? So, like, this all goes on just in the beginning of a committee meeting, right? Type 9 says we haven't heard from everyone, and we want all voices to be included. And then you have somebody saying, are we going to get anything done? Both of those are good values, are they not? But, ooh, I've been in those meetings. I know. And then finally, there's an idealist perfectionist. You want to think like Michelle Obama, Martha Stewart, who's trying to organize your sock drawer, and Hillary Clinton, who's trying to organize women in politics, and when she was first lady, children's health care. These are reformers. Martin Luther was a reformer. The Enneagram type 1 has an eye for error, and they want to improve things. Improvement is a good value, is it not? Some of you lead with, we should be improving, raising ethics, raising standards. But like anything, if that value is overdone, you can become critical. It can become too much. All 9 of these Enneagram styles or values, if overdone, become a vice. Which leads me to sadly say that the early Christians were right, that any form of love or value, if overdone, ceases to be a virtue. It becomes a vice because we become fixed. If we can't see that now's the time to talk about safety and security, not pleasure, we've lost our place. We're not being helpful. If we want to only focus on improvement, but people aren't being warmly welcomed at the door, then we've lost a value. So as a community, a political community, a spiritual community, a community of people, this gives you a roadmap to understand why somebody would focus on people being warmly welcomed at the door and somebody else saying, let's make sure there's no strangers that could be dangerous inside the parking lot, and someone else saying, do we have a library for people to get information privately? Right? For those of us that like to avoid coffee hour, is there a place that quiet people can go? So this pluralism has a map. It's not random. It is so worth learning. so worth learning. So I hope you choose to learn a little bit more. If you go to my website, which is Enneagram Portland, or my name, Dale Rhodes, you'll see really great videos a lot of you use in my community of students that you can learn about it. And I hope that you would decide to come here. If there's enough people, we'll do an in-person workshop next week. If there is just a small group, we'll do it online. That may make a difference for some of you. But the handout is on your lap. And I wish I had Karen's recruitment. Like, if you don't sign up, we'll be on your doorstep tomorrow. I don't have that kind of power, but that's why she's the board chair and I'm not. Shall I give our final reading? Or take some questions? What would you like? You can't even see me, can you? I'm over here.
I was about to say, I can't hear you. So obviously we have gone over time. It's up to you. Do you want to take a few more minutes to chat with Dale?
A
couple of hands going up. Okay. Now, I'm going to need a mic, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll use that. I'll take that one around. Okay.
Thank
yeah.
You.
Let's get a couple of questions before we leave. Is this on? Yes. Okay. It says it's on. Get her up real close.
First of all, thank you so much for the presentation.
It's hold on.
Why don't you ask my question? I just want to know about the arrows. Why aren't all number nines connected to all other numbers? Or is that how the circle works? Or is that also connected?
Oh, so you want an explanation of the diagram. Okay, all she wants is an explanation of the diagram. In 10 words or less.
Right?
So sorry. Low coffee or low blood sugar here. The diagram describes a dynamic way of being. A lot of people in the beginning, when they learn the Enneagram, I don't want to be type. I'm not a personality type. I'm more than that. Absolutely. We have a propensity to move amongst certain values. So the arrows point to other content that we visit a lot. Now, that visiting of certain content might tell you that you avoid. For example, let's just say that Gloria Steinem and Mr. Rogers, both type 9s, generally, in my opinion, they avoid tooting their own horn. They tooted the horn of movements, children's education, TV, and Ms. Magazine and the feminist movement. They were basically kind of moved away from type 3, which is very comfortable tooting your own horn. And it was a great example of Enneagram 3. Probably Oprah Winfrey. You know who's the only person that's ever on O Magazine's cover? Oprah Winfrey. This is not, I love Oprah. She does very good. But Oprah doesn't have any issue with self-promotion. Nines can be against self-promotion. That's just one example of a dynamic psychology, inner and outer, that the Enneagram points to. And it's worth knowing. I'm glad you asked. You had a question over there. Yeah, you want the mic? You give it to them.
Well, yeah, basically, and basically the same question. I mean, why does 9 point to 3 if they're not anywhere
like each other.
It's the visiting of the content. It's really a map that if you stop thinking about this as like this is a person, but this is a system of values that a person visits and maybe an organization visits, you'll see that there's patterns. You will go in and notice that there are certain values that are appreciated, and there are certain values that are demonized or avoided. We're doing that all the time. We're doing that all the time. And it's a good thing to know that at times, we personally or as an organization are against certain values with the rest.
All right. What else? What else? I think we're going to close it down. We are going to do without our special music this morning. We are doing without a number of things, but so it is. And as I said earlier, we are nothing if not flexible.